This is the UCLA Mindful Weekly Lecture. Each week, Diana Winston, or one of our UCLA Mindful teachers, offers a talk about mindfulness to deepen our understanding and cultivate well-being. Thanks for joining us.
Today's session, it's about going from fear to choice in uncertain times. When I agreed to do this session a few weeks ago, actually months ago, I think, I had no idea in what state the world would be or in what state I would be. I was born in Iran and I live in North America. So I am in a very challenging position as I watch the news and the goings on of the world. Yet my practice and what I have learned to do is really helping me. These are challenging times. I know you've heard that many times, but really these are challenging times. Thank you, Miranda. These are difficult times, but the question is, what can I do? Thank you. Thank you for your beautiful hearts. It is hard. I'm not going to hide it. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I'm not going to say, oh, it's all right. It is not my first time going through this, unfortunately, but it is the first time that I'm feeling truly and thoroughly in tension because I really can't fathom what's going on. So what do we do? What do we do when this happens? Well, the issue is that most of the time we live in survival, in fear. And what does that mean? Really, what I'm talking about is believing, allowing that our mind to tell us that we fall into a sort of state that feels threatening and it feels uncertain, even when it is not threatening and uncertain. And in this state, the mind focuses on danger. It always thinks there is danger. So what do we do when we feel in danger? Either protecting, controlling, attacking. The body tells us that this is not a good time. It's anxious. The heartbeat is faster. It's not settled. Sleep is not easy. So a lot of physical and biological signs tell us this is not a comfortable time. Our mind, you know, is running faster than anything else. Our emotions are all over the place. And there are times that actually there is a reason for it. You know, we truly are in danger. There is something happening, but it's not always. The problem is when we feel living in fear, this becomes our default. Living like that becomes our default. We believe that danger is imminent and there's always a problem. And funny thing is when there is very little problem, I won't say no problem because we always have something to deal with. When there's little problem and we live like that, then there is no capacity to hold things when actually there is a danger and we need to work through difficult things. It's really interesting. It's almost like we have used or maybe overused our capacity and our resources to work through difficult times. So fear becomes our default. In my book, The Attentionist, I speak about how most of us, most of the time, live in fear. And it's a huge claim because when I say fear, when I say survival, usually people talk about like people on the street or in war zones. But I'm talking about people living in cities and somehow protected. Yet, no matter what they know and what they own, they still feel that they are in fear. That's why we work the way we do. That's why we socialize the way we do. It's in fear. I'm fearful that you may not like me or I may not be as good as you or I may not be safe even though I am safe. So all these artificial fears or illusionary dangers eat up our resources. And then when it's time for actual and practical and wise usage of our resources, there's not much left. Am I saying these are not difficult times? I'm not. I started by saying they are. But even in difficult times, we can find spaces, we can find spaciousness, we can find ways to be with what is. And from there, and this is not an invitation to passivity and doing nothing, it's an invitation to doing wise things and wise actions. You just saw with the practice that we did, and the guided practice, and it was a short practice. I invited you to feel and see and hear things, and then I invited you to do the same in a more spacious way. Same sounds, same things around you, same feelings. I didn't ask you to change it, but we held it in a different way. And that's exactly the invitation that I have for you about other things in life, that we are equipped, we are capable, and we are able to hold life, even in difficult times, in a different way. And sometimes we get tested, and sometimes we don't, but we need to be very well practiced for the time that we need to show up for ourselves. So what's an antidote to survivalism and fear? I made up a word. I mean, attentionist is not a word. I'm very aware of it. It's funny, when I told my friends that's the name of my book, they thought, since English is my second language, I didn't know. They said, Mitra, that's not a word. I said, I know. I made it up. They said, but you can't make it up. I said, why? Somebody else made up the words that we're using. Why can't I make up a word? So I thought that was within my rights to make a word. So the attentionist is the opposite of the survivalist. What does that mean? Attentionist is reclaiming your choice, is understanding that I have a choice. I have a choice beyond the choices that my fearful mind is offering me. Because, by the way, this is nothing to do with bad mouthing our survivalist mind, because without that, we cannot cross the street in one piece. There is a room, there is a task and job description for our survival mind, or what I call the rational mind. There is room for that. In fact, huge one. Without that, we won't make it. But when it oversteps, when our rational mind oversteps its boundaries, its job description, and interferes with other things, then that's when we have a problem. Once I survive, I say thank you to my rational mind, and I bring in my attention. And that's the state of attentionism that I speak about, that we see facts instead of just our difficult emotions. We see choices beyond what our frightened, petrified mind is telling us. And then from there, we can actually choose wisely, because there's always a choice. There is always a choice that we can take, and we can go through, that it would be more helpful for us and helpful for the world we live in. So in attentionism, we start seeing possibilities that we did not see. Just like when we started looking in the room and we saw things that we probably see every day. You probably are sitting in your rooms or offices. I'm very familiar with items around me. But when I really, really see them, when I pay my attention to them in a different way, I see them differently, and I see things that I have not seen before. So the mind works the same way. When I pay my attention to things beyond my frightened mind, I see possibilities that are really surprising. I'm going to use that word. They're surprising. I just didn't know that that's a possibility. That's what they call it, out-of-box thinking. That's what they call creative thinking. But really, that can be our default thinking. So I bring in my attention, I live in the state of attentionism, meaning I always know I have a choice, because attentionism includes survivalism, meaning once I pay attention, I'm sitting here, let's say there is a big noise and I'm like wondering what it is. When I pay my attention and I'm very present in the moment and I say, what are the facts of this moment? I actually recognize it if it's a real danger, if it's something that I need to protect myself from. But survivalism does not include attentionism, because in survival, we can only survive. We cannot thrive. Attentionism can allow us to survive and allow us to go beyond survival and perhaps touch and hopefully live in the state of choice and thriving. So in simple terms, what I'm saying is that attentionism is the state in which we consciously place our attention. I am in charge of my attention and I can expand my perception of what's going on. And I discover the ability that I have had. It was my natural ability. It was my inheritance, I call it. It's our inheritance. And I claim that and I see it differently. So the question may be, and I'm going to open it to question and answer, that what do I do in difficult times, whether personally difficult times or professionally or globally, and or maybe a combo of this? What do I do? My invitation to you is to always remember that you do have a choice, that your default is not always your best choice. And once you go beyond that, once you start asking questions and saying, okay, I understand my emotions. I understand what I'm feeling. I honor that. I feel them. I allow them to go through my body. But I also am aware that there is much more to this than what my frightened mind is offering me in this moment. And then as you discover your choices, as you allow other choices to become available, then you will see that in that state, there are lots more available to you. How do I do that? I do that by physically, and that's what we did. When we're humming, when we are putting our hands in areas that allow our body to settle down, I'm doing it for those of you who are not seeing the video, I'm actually putting one hand on my heart and one hand on my top of my head. That allows the body to settle down. It says it's okay. There are no dangers right now in this moment. When I invited you to, even if it's mechanical, to smile, that's another tool, to tell the body it's all right. So what we're doing is we're allowing, we're inviting, we're helping our physical body to settle down first. Because if body is intention, it's very, very hard to think about choices. Mind-wise, what do we do? There are a lot of things we do. There are a lot of mindfulness tools that we have in our bags, and sounds like and looks like you are regulars and you attend these sessions. So I'm sure you have a lot of tools. But one of my favorite tools for the mind is to just repeat a word that calms me. Whatever that is. I'm here now. I'm here now. I'm here now. Or I call it wearing a jacket. So I choose a jacket, like slow is very important to me because I have a type A personality. So slow is very helpful. So I wear the jacket of slow. So I just say slow down, slow down. No, no rush, no rush. Slow, I'm slowing down. And I feel my mind settling down. Or if it's emotionally, there is something happening that it's very, very difficult to handle. If it's truly difficult to handle in this moment, I can do it later. But if it's something that I can allow it to go through me, I say this and I say this with with certainty that if I'm experiencing it, I'm capable of experiencing it and going through it. I think there is intelligence in this universe that is beyond my intelligence. And if it has determined that I'm capable of doing it, I trust that. And also my life has told me that. Every time I thought this is it, this one is going to break me, it seemed like it didn't, and I'm still in one piece. And that allows me a point of reference. So I invite you to find a point of reference in your life. So we can do it right now. Find one memory, one event in your life that it was very challenging. However, you made yourself go through it and you made it. And I'm going to even go further. Not only you made it, but you also maybe even grew through it. Just find one. It doesn't need to be award-winning experience. It could be something very simple. I went through a difficult discussion. I went through a difficult experience. And here I am. I'm sitting here. So find a point of reference and remind yourself that everything you're experiencing, honoring that, it is hard, it is overwhelming, it is challenging. And this is not a period, it's a comma. I can handle it. I find a way of handling it. I can handle it. And that allows you to look for it, because if you think something doesn't exist, you will never look for it. But if you think it exists, at the very least, you will be looking for the so-called solution that you might be looking for. So what I am inviting you to do is to really tap into deeper resources that you all are holding within you. And don't wait until you have to, because the last minute, the 11th hour, is not the perfect time to go and dig in your resources. But when I practice, and that's where the practice comes in, when it doesn't matter, then when it does matter, I'm able to access that capability and that potentiality that it exists within me much easier. So what I'm talking about is about capacity building. If I can't change the world or the people in the world or the events of the world, I can increase my capacity. And that's what attentionism is, that I pay my precious attention and I call attention our inner currency. So we have money that belongs to the outer world, the physical world. I want something, I pay, in many ways now there's Bitcoin, this, that, whatever it is, I pay some currency to purchase it. And the inner world is the same. I pay, and it's interesting that that word, pay money, pay attention. I pay my attention to certain experience, and that experience becomes mine. So attention is my inner currency. We manage our money, at least some of us. We have management, we have financial advisors, but we do not have attention advisors. We don't have people that we can go to and say, my attention is really scattered all over the place. And the louder voice in the world, which usually is the fearful voice, captures my attention. So it seems like the corporate world is quite aware of the value of our attention. Do you know how much they pay for 30 seconds of ad on TV? They know. And sometimes you see they even give us free stuff to just capture our attention and capture our information. That's fascinating to me, what you can find these days for free. So what do they want in return, I wonder? They just want your attention because they know the value of your attention. So if they know it, why can't I know the value of my attention and work through it and with it differently? So I feel like I talked a lot. I want to take you in a guided practice, but I also would like to answer questions if there are any. If not, that's fine too. So let's see. You can raise your hand because I can't see all of you electronically by going to react. If you look at your the bottom of your screen, there's a heart. It says react. And if you click on it, it says, oh, reaction setting. How do we animate emoji? Oh, it doesn't, I can't see the raise hand here. Okay, then raise your hand manually because I can't see it. That's interesting.
It is there, Mitra. When you push the react button, if you scroll down, it says raise hand. It's coming up on mine.
Okay, all right. Mine. I think it's because I'm in. I'm the speaker. I can't see it. Okay, so say it, please, Nikki. How do they do?
Sorry. Just push that react button where the little heart is.
Uh-huh.
And you just scroll down, and there's a bar that says raise hand, and just click on that bar, and the little hand will come up in your box.
Perfect. Okay. Thank you for that. You may want to bring your camera down. Oh, okay, Deborah, go ahead. Why do I want to bring my camera down? Okay, I'll do it. Deborah, go ahead. Please unmute yourself and ask a question.
Here I go, sorry. I got lost in the meditation. I was so relaxed. I'm sorry, please allow someone to go ahead.
That's a perfect place to be after meditation. No problem. Thank you. Okay, let's see. Is there anybody else? I don't see anyone else. I don't see anyone else. Okay, let me just...
Mitra, I just raised my hand because I just thought it would be good to just talk a little bit about, you talked about going through a difficult experience,
mm-hmm.
and that, you know, how you could speak to how we hold on to those. And how we carry that with us, if you want to speak to that.
Sure. Difficult emotions, believe it or not, act very much like an addiction. We become addicted to those feelings. It makes no logical sense when I say it, but it does become that, and we get addicted to certain feelings. We in fact start to identify with them. And as a result, it's very hard to let them go. And once we decide, and that decision is very important, I'm going to ask Deborah to mute herself because I can hear a lot of echoes. Deborah, could you please mute yourself? Thank you. So what happens is that that becomes my default, carrying those pains or suffering, because they're two different things, it becomes my habit and it becomes very difficult to let it go. Once I decide to let it go, then another world opens up for me and I can see my choices in a different way. But until I make that decision and until I acknowledge what's going on, that's why the first step is to say, my name is Mitra and I am, and you express it, you announce it, you declare it, what the challenge is or what the challenging emotion is that you are accustomed to and has become your default. That is the most fundamentally important step in going from survival and fear into choice and attentionism. That's that. I'm going to leave it at that because this is a short meeting, but that's it. Once you decide, there are a lot of things you can do. I say that because when I work with people, I realize that they really are not ready. They have not made that decision. That's a better way of saying it. Not ready. You can be ready at any given time, but they haven't made a decision. So there is no tool. There is no practice. There is no magic wand that can do it for you. until and unless you decide that I no longer would like to experience this as my default emotion. So, all right, let me see. Maybe we can don't see any other hands raised. It is true, PTSD. Believe me, I'm very familiar with that, especially these days. It's not a choice, but whoever wrote down, they said PTSD is not a choice, it's a state. It is true, but there is also choice within experiencing PTSD. That's a very important part of working through that. When I believe that state is who I am, I probably would be very hard for me to get out of that. And it comes from a person who has gone through a lot, and I'm speaking from experience, not just professionally, but also personally. So it is true, but when that becomes my identity, then it becomes impossible for me to work through that and go beyond that. Thank you for whoever said that. Sharon, please go ahead.
Hi. I can't get my camera to work, so we'll just go with that. But I found out that I have attention deficit disorder, and I found this out late in life. And so that's a little bit interesting too, because it explains a lot of things. But like many females, I masked it very carefully, so people wouldn't think that I am, but it is hard for me to control my thoughts. That is one thing. I'm either hyper focused, and that's how I can survive work. But then, my mind wants to bounce around. I call it a puppy. It just wants to bounce all over the place.
Okay, so can't is a very strong word. I understand that it's probably more difficult, but can't is a very eternal statement. Do you believe that you really can't, or do you believe that it's more challenging for you to do so?
Oh, to pay attention.
Yes.
I do believe it's possible. I've been drawn to yoga since I was in my 30s, and I always leave a class feeling a lot more focused and calmer. And it's what you were talking about. I didn't realize that my body gets very agitated and full of energy, and then my mind starts spinning. And I didn't realize my body needs to get controlled. And so this our exercise that you did really helped. So I'm just learning it, and I'm like, I've been around for a few decades.
Haven't we all? All right. So my only invitation to you was this, that be aware of the words that you use when you describe your challenges, because words have a lot of power, and the mind starts believing what we tell it. And
Yes.
when I say I can't, mind says, sure. I accept what you're saying. I make sure
Right.
that you can't. Am I not believing in conditions? Oh, believe me, I do. I have many severe conditions. In fact, they study me for developing curriculum for children with extreme dyslexia. However, I also know that's not who I am. That's just
Right.
the condition that through which I understand the world. Or through which that you received the world. And I'm just very aware of the statements that one makes about who they are and what they can and can't do. Is it more challenging? Yes. Is it more exciting? Yes. I mean, when I understand things, because I don't understand things like, people without my condition do, it's so exciting for me. It's just like, ooh, I sometimes make noises and everybody looks at me and says like, that wasn't a big deal. For me, it was because I couldn't understand it. In fact, your character is informed by your so-called, I call them diverse abilities instead of disabilities. They are diverse abilities that are very different, but they also can be very helpful in you connecting to yourself and understanding yourself and working with yourself in a different way. And that's where the probably gift will be for you.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, I think I don't see anybody else. I need to do a guided meditation, and there. So somebody is asking me, let me just read what they have said to me. Okay. Let's just do a practice around what I just taught you. So bring your body into a comfortable posture, whatever that means to you. And what might be helpful is to take your shoulders up to your ears and then release them and let them drop and lengthen your breathing. And if it is okay for you, close your eyes. And I want you to invite a very kind person that you know or you know of to come and sit next to you when we do these challenging exercises. It's good to have a helper sitting next to us. And I want you to bring to your awareness while you're sitting next to a very kind, supportive person. In fact, you can ask them to hold your hands. Bring into your awareness one current stressor in your life. It could be personal, it could be world related, family related, just something that is giving you stress these days. Just bring that into your awareness. And I invite you to notice the survivalist indicators in your body. What happens when you think about this stress in your life? Notice if your body is contracting. Notice if your breathing goes faster. Just notice what you notice. And now I want you to allow your body to gently settle down and regulate. And the most available place to relax is our physicality and our body. So let's start with your face. If you're frowning, you can relax your muscles. If your lips are tight, open them and allow them to be a little bit in a state of gentle relaxation. Release your tongue. Drop your shoulders. Open up your throat. Rest your hands. Expand your chest. And soften your belly. Just allow it to wiggle a little bit and soften up. Relax your feet. And I want you to picture the bottom of your feet have roots, and they're rooted onto earth, grounded, strong, holding you. And as you're doing this, I want you to be aware of the imaginary kind person that is sitting next to you. Ask for help if you need it. Hold their hands if it helps. And just notice how you're holding this dresser that you were holding in the beginning of the practice. Now we're going to widen our attention. Notice the space around your body. And this space is a little bit less dense than your body. Create a pause between your breaths. So as you're breathing, take a pause. And then fully empty your breath. There is no rush. They have nowhere to go and nothing to do right now. I want you to imagine as a grounded being that you are, like a tree, see yourself as a really tall tree, one of those trees that you wonder how many thousands of years they've been there. So elongating your body and growing it towards the sky. We're rooted on this earth and we're growing towards the sky. And go as far as your imagination can take you. How tall can you be as a tree? And remember, you're rooted and you're foundationally very strong, so there's no fear there. You still have this kind person next to you, and now your view of the world is expanding as you're growing and imagining yourself as a tree. Now, from the top of that tree, I want you to now look down and see this stressor, whatever it is, that you have chosen to look at. Do you see it differently? And how do you see it differently? And as you look around, you see many other trees around you. And they are looking around. So, in this vast view of life, we stand rooted on earth. We are supported by kindness. And we are connected as a community. Do you see your challenge, even if it is slightly differently? Can you hold this issue or challenge differently? Perhaps even a solution or something that will help you will come to your awareness from this place, from this higher grounds. And as you look around, there are many, many trees, some taller than you, some shorter than you, some wiser than you, some younger than you. They're all there. And as you know, trees, unlike human beings, still remember that they are one. They're united. Through their roots, they remember their connection. So ask around from a wiser tree. Or listen to a younger tree. What is something small that I can do in the next 24 hours that will be helpful for me, that will allow me to build a deeper capacity, a larger capacity to hold or resolve this thing that is giving me a lot of stress? Something that can support my well-being. I invite you to sit in silence for a little bit and allow any knowing, any wisdom, any creativity that wants to arrive and meet you to come and meet you. You're sitting tall, and as you feel connected to the knowing and the wisdom that the collective consciousness is holding, gently and kindly. While asking for help from the kind person next to you, ask yourself, what is one thing I do that keeps me or takes me to the land of fear and state of survival? That is not necessary. I mean, there are things that we do that we need to do, but what is one thing that you do? It's different for different people. But that would be a good question. How do I put myself in the harm's way? What is one thing that I do? And it could be something very common. It could be arguing with people that I know how I'm going to feel afterwards. It could be watching a particular news that I know affects me and my well-being. It could be something that I eat or drink that I know it's harmful to me. What is that one thing that I do that takes me deeper into survival mode? So, if something comes to your awareness, see if you can make a gentle decision or a gentle commitment not to do that one thing. Just what is it one thing you can do differently that will allow you to come out of the fear and survival mode? With the help of the community, with the help of the kind person, with the help of all the trees around you, would you make that commitment to yourself? Just one simple, small commitment. Please don't go to blame and why you haven't done it so far and how you are not capable. Don't go there. We just moving forward, see if you can make that commitment. And if you can't, that's fine too. Maybe later you can make that commitment, but clarify the commitment. Notice any resistance that might be showing up. Are you still tall as a tree? Can you still see a lot of options around you? Can you now picture yourself as if that commitment has taken place? So here's what I want you to do. I don't want you to be that person. I want you to watch yourself being that person. So you are the observer and you're seeing yourself when you have fulfilled that commitment. And my invitation to you is that if you have any restrictions that you have put up on yourself, just for the purpose of playfulness, let that not be an obstacle for you right now. Things that we believe we can't do, and I know there are things that truly we can't do. But if it's an imaginary I can't do, just play with that and see if you can soften that statement for yourself. Gently tap that statement and see if it's hollow or if it's solid. When I say I cannot, or I do not have any options, question it. Sometimes it's true, sometimes it isn't. Is it true? If it is, put it aside and go to the next commitment that you can do. Maybe I cannot walk, but maybe I can move my legs. Maybe I cannot move my legs, but I can move my hands. So, very gently bring with you a commitment, a statement, something small that you can do differently. Hold that thing like a gift, like a box near to your heart, and imagine yourself gently coming down as a tree and back into your own body, sitting where you're sitting. And before we open our eyes, see if you can say these words to yourself and see if they resonate with you. Just say to yourself, may my attention be placed where it reduces harm and increases steadiness for myself, for people around me, and for the world. So, as we look at our attention from the perspective of inner currency, then we can invite ourselves to manage that currency mindfully. As I place my attention on fill in the blank, am I adding or am I taking away from myself, my well-being, or others? How am I contributing or taking away well-being by placing my attention on this? It's a gentle question. Let us breathe together. Feel your body on the seat that you're sitting. Wiggle your toes. Notice your left arm. Move your right hand. And gently bring your awareness back to the room. And open your eyes when it feels comfortable to do so. Okay. I'm going to ask you to ask questions in audio form because I do not understand questions that are written. So if you have a question, please ask it so I can understand and answer it. Okay, so I've got a lot of text to me, but yeah, that's my problem. I forgot to tell you that I do not read well. Okay. Anybody wants to share what happened in their meditation and practice? Something that might help others? Thank you. Thank you, a lot of hearts. I thank you for your practice, but can somebody share what happened and if you have anything of value to share? And everything is of value, by the way.
Mitra?
Yes, go ahead.
I just had my first cancer treatment today, and this helped me so much.
Oh, thank you. Oh, wow. Wow.
This was wonderful. Thank you.
Wow.
I'm feeling very good. I'm doing very well, and I'm going to stay that way. I'm going to focus on that and not on what it could be.
Oh, wow. Well, you made my day.
You made my day too. Thank
I'm
you.
not feeling that well either. Thank you. Thank you. Wow. Amazing what we're holding. Amazing. Thank you. Anybody else wants to share? Okay. Let me see. What do you want me to speak about? I can expand on attentionism if you like, because it seems like this is a shy group. I'm not used to no questions. My classes are like, I can't answer all the questions, but okay, there are no enough questions here. That's fine. So I can speak about the different states that human beings are in. I'm going to speak about that. So I divide the states that we live in into three states. One of them is survivalism. That's the default. That's most people are living in that state most of the time. And the second state was the state of attention. And the state of attention is when we recognize and realize that we have a choice. And even if the choice is challenging, but I do have a choice. And that's the state that is really allows us to expand our horizon and allows us to expand and increase our capacity. That's when a statement like when you shared and said, I had cancer and I have cancer and I had cancer treatment. That's when cancer doesn't have you. You're just like, it doesn't hold you. You're just experiencing this unwellness in your body. So it doesn't capture you fully. The events of the world don't hold you back from experiencing your choices. And then there is this third state of being, which, we're it's difficult to imagine, but we hear that enlightened people are living on this planet, and that's the state of eternalism. So the question always is, how much by the habits and the way of living that I am doing today, I'm contributing to the state of fear and survival? And how much am I, imagine it as, since we talked about attention being a currency, how am I, depositing and saving? How much of what I do and the choices that I make, which is everything, the words I use, the thoughts that I think, the actions I take, contribute towards the state of fear that I see that we live in. So there are the conditions that are around us and there are out of our command. I don't dictate the state of the world, but I do. There is another country. So the countries, I don't tell them what to do, but there's a country here called me that I command that I can say how I show up. And that authority is the authority that sometimes has been forgotten. And it's almost like we don't remember the day that we actually were in charge of that. It is not so much what's happening in the world that I have a say in, as it is how I relate to that. This is where we distinguish between pain and suffering. Pain is what's going on. That's the pain. Suffering is my relationship to the pain. And that's why when something happens in the world, we don't all suffer the same way. It's the same common pain. Let's say a loved one is lost in a family. It's a common pain, but it's not a common suffering. Every person in that family, every person in this world is now suffering in a different way. The question is, how do I choose to see the pain but reduce my suffering? And that is by the choices I make. I need to activate my choices. Most of the time, that when I am in fear, and I'm only speaking personally, I don't even remember that I do have a choice. And this choice consciousness is extremely important to my well-being. That and that's what happens when sometimes people say, I was in this state and I was suffering and I was in that relationship or I was stuck in this job. And all of a sudden I decided to take an action that is different or show up differently. So the pain stayed the same, but the suffering got reduced because of the choices that the person has made. And I think that's the main message that I would like to relay today, that please don't forget you have a choice. Once I know I have a choice, then I look for it. And then, the completely the situation becomes a different kind of experience for me. And that's how we do it. We live with fear and survival because we are answering certain questions by the choices we make. And the questions are three main questions by which we live. The first question is, what is wrong? We seem to be answering that question a lot of the times when we are in fear. What is wrong? And you may ask, what is wrong with what? What is wrong with me? That's the first one we go at. We go at ourselves because this is the most available person to us. What is wrong with me? What is wrong with the world? Or what is wrong with the people in the world, whoever they may be to me, my family, my colleagues, my neighbors, my friends, whoever. So that question becomes the primary question. That's how you recognize that you are primarily living in fear, that most of the time you're asking what is wrong. The second question that we ask in the state of survival is, am I safe? And that's a very valid question, of course, when we go into the world. But once the answer is yes, I'm safe, that question is not needed anymore. But I stay in that state as if in any given moment, even in a, let's say, social gathering or in a workplace, my life is in danger. So it is hard to even become creative. It is hard to even look at options. It's hard to be even productive. Let's just get very practical, because most of my attention, and attention is like you can look at it from a perspective of numbers. Let's say I have 10 units of attention. The question is, how am I spending it? And if 8 of that 10 is going towards, am I safe when there is no need for it? Of course, when there's need for it, of course, I've traveled alone as a woman to places that I can't spell. So yeah, I mean, my antennas were high up and completely watching, but I don't need to feel that like right now sitting here. If I'm still that heightened aware of danger sitting here, then I may be wanting to look at whether it's a wrong question that I'm asking. Do I need to ask whether or not I'm safe? So that's the second question. And the third question that I ask in the state of fear is, do I belong? Do I belong to this family, to this community, to this group? And the groups change all the time. As I go to a workplace, it's a different group, or I go to a gathering, it's a different group, or I come here, it's a different group. We want to belong. But in fear, instead of my attention going into connection, best way to connect is to be curious. But in fear, I can't be curious. I'm judgmental. By the way, to me, the opposite of judgment is curiosity, because judgment says that, I know and I know better, and there's something wrong. And curiosity says, oh, that's interesting. Tell me. I want to know. I'm open. Please tell me. So that's what happens when I ask that question, and when I constantly feel, do I belong? So I forget my own authenticity. I forget what I want, who I am, what I am feeling, what are my needs. So I'm trying to please others, and when it doesn't happen, I get frustrated, I get angry, I become, defensive, or I attack. All those things that we do in the state of fear. So if you're asking these three questions, or you're living by these questions, because that's what happens. We're always living by answering certain questions. Am I worthy? Am I safe? Do I belong? Am I is there something wrong? Then you know that you're living in the state of fear. And the whole setup of the world is in a way that keeps us in that state of fear, unfortunately. We need to be very mindful and active and proactive in order to come out of that state. So that was my little spiel for fear. Ending, I'm being asked to send the link to my book. I'm going to send it to Serena so she can post it to everyone, because I don't think I can. And oh no, I can. Sorry, I can. So I'm going to send it there and you can click on it. But I think what's important to ask yourself is, what is one thing that I'm taking away from just today in this sharing and this meditation, and allow it to be something that is helpful for you. Just one small thing. If you took like tiny little thing, I think it made my time to be worthwhile, and hopefully your time. And that's it for me. There's 2 minutes left. Is there anything? Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for your thank yous. Is there anything else that I can answer and clarify before we say goodbye? Thank you, Miranda. No. All right. So let us just close by a very gentle and short practice. Let us take a deep breath. Let us start sending ourselves some good wishes, whatever it is that you need. May I, and you can fill in the blank for yourself. Pick one thing you want to wish for yourself. And then see if you can extend it to everyone here in this group and everyone in the country that you come from and into the rest of the world. May everyone everywhere feel the word for me is balanced. May they feel balanced and stable. And may we choose to think, to talk, and to act in a way that it adds to our well-being and the well-being of the world. Thank you for your presence. Thank you for your contribution, and let us have a wonderful evening wherever you are. Take good care.
Thanks for listening to the UCLA Mindful Weekly Lecture. For more information about our classes, workshops, and retreats, please visit uclahealth.org/UCLA Mindful. Join us each week for a new session on mindfulness.